Let's also extend our greetings to the senior official from the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. I wanted to say something about cooperation, but let's leave it for now. Also welcome our guests from other formations who are here, who are always here with us. Thank you very much for your support and your attendance of this committee meeting. Can I just remind you that we are going to take a discussion about or from two new structures that were launched by the Minister Nkwane Machabane last year, the South African Council on International Relations, under the chairmanship of the former Deputy Minister, Mr. Aziz Fahad. I'm reliably informed that he will not be able to be here in person. The other structure was the Association of Former Ambassadors and High Commissioner. Well, I'm told he's always high. He's never just a commissioner. And High Commissioner and the George Mende is the chair, and he too is not able to be here with us. So that presentation will come from Mr. Nasaruddin, who is the head of both SADC and this other structure, Association of Former Ambassadors and High Commissioners. So he will make a presentation. But over a period of time, we'll still I think it's acceptable, we'll still call these two structures just to have a discussion with them about the work that we are doing, just to enrich the committee with more understanding about their work. And thank you very much, Mr. Nasaruddin, for making yourself available for that particular presentation. Now, the other presentation will come around 12 o'clock, time permitting the other side. The minister, hopefully in the company of the two deputy ministers, will be here with us to present the Foreign Service Bill, together with the white paper on South Africa's foreign policy. So they will go together. I think there was a presentation on the white paper last year, but we have requested them just to summarize the principal features of the white paper, within which we think the Foreign Service Bill is located. So the minister should be able to join us around 12 o'clock. As I said, time permitting, if there's a slight delay, we'll then have some short break, human rights break, I would imagine. Yeah. For now, I then want to defer to you. Oh, by the way, I must go to the housekeeping issues. Are there any apologies that need to be recorded, honorable member? Yeah, I think I'm not seeing you. Honorable Kalia?
Mokalapa
is in Zambia. Yes, and then? And Zino? Is a pause from your side? Okay, yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. The other three apologies are from Honorable Sidagli for attending the Secrets Forum, and Honorable H. Lopez and Honorable M. Lekote are attending the IEC meeting. Thank you, sir. Honorable Shope and Honorable Lekote and Honorable Khalabu are attending the IPU conference.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
So, without four members, nonetheless, we'll soldier on. Yeah. Okay then, the apologies are so recorded. Can I then hear you on the agenda? I've spoken to the two items 4 and 5. How our day looks like today. And our Raputi?
Yeah. General Raputi is moving for the adoption of the agenda.
You are moving for the adoption. Second. And Rav Kalyan, you are seconding. And Honorable Kenya is serving. Welcome, Honorable Kenya. Okay, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, colleagues from the department. Let me start off by saying apologies for the two chairpersons who were scheduled to be here. We are trying to coordinate with them so that we bring them here. When we last discussed this with them, our hope was that they would be able to come when the minister does have budget votes, that we would then have them here so that they could also schedule a meeting with the portfolio committee and present the respective institutions themselves. So I will just give a broad overview of the two institutions in the anticipation that they will also, as the chair indicated at the later stage, brief the committee themselves. Now, the genesis of establishment of the South African Council on International Relations was that we have for our minister and our deputy ministers outreach programs which they do as part of the work of ensuring that we continue to consult with, brief and inform local constituencies of what we are doing in the international relations arena, and also to ensure that our foreign policy is in fact a reflection and a projection of our domestic imperatives. So between the two deputy ministers and the minister, there's 30 outreach programs. The policy unit, which I am the head.
I think there's just an omission from the chair that I think I should correct. Just an introduction of yourself, and that you who's the ambassador.
My apologies.
Let me hand over to my DDT first to do the chair.
Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Mati Reini. I am responsible for the branch diplomat training and research and development. So we are the branch that takes care of, we've been asked as a focal point for ASAFA, the Association for Foreign Ambassadors. We also provide the secretarial support to SAQUAIA, the Council on Foreign Relations. And the third one, which is the mediation support unit, also resides within the branch DTRD. Mr. Nasruddin is the director for PROW. Chief director for policy research and analysis, so he deals with this matter. He links with himself. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm here on behalf of the Deputy Minister's Office just for an observance as part of my own parliamentary liaison function, Chairperson. Deputy Minister will be coming at 12 o'clock because we had assumed that Ambassador Nene and former Deputy Minister Pahad would have been presenting here this morning on that show. Okay.
Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And my apologies for not introducing it. The outreach programs then that were being done by the department and the consultations before major summits such as climate change, the AU summit, etc., is part of what our unit does as well. And it was felt by the minister that apart from these occasions when we bring together various stakeholders, that perhaps we needed to have a platform that has already got a standing committee to which all the various stakeholders represented in the body that the minister is able to convene on a regular basis, and also if and when required to discuss particular issues. So that is how the idea for the establishment of a council came about. Of course, there were discussions in between as to what form this should be. Should it be an ad hoc working group? Should it be a commission, etc., etc.? But basically, we ended up with a formulation and established terms of reference for a group of up to 25 members who would be drawn from the various sectors, namely academia and think tanks, business, organized labor, and then some of the other NGOs that are dealing with socio-economic matters. So this was advertised, and a selection process was undertaken, and the minister... So this was then when the minister launched last year the South African Council on International Relations. At that stage was about 21 of the 25 members. Like I said, I emphasized that it should be up to 25, and we, for cross-cutting measures, etc., we're now trying to keep the number to about 20, so we're not actively looking for the additional membership. We did go through a process also of the cluster, and then went through a cabinet. So this body and its terms of reference were approved by cabinet, and the members were in fact appointed by the minister in consultation with cabinet. So we had to go back to cabinet once we had finalized the list of members, and we then proceeded with cabinet approval. So, or concurrence, I should say. When we prepared for the public launch of the council in June last year, we also had, in parallel, had Ambassador Nene and a number of other former ambassadors talking about the importance of South Africa starting to find a formal way to organize and continue to utilize the immense capacity we have amongst our retired ambassadors, high commissioners, and permanent representatives that we've had in our system, not only in their capacity as potential trainers, but also as advisors, as special envoys, and various other ways in which the department could draw on their expertise. If I may use an example, now that we have once again Burundi as an issue. We have had people who were involved in the initial mediation who are now retired. We have had people who have served there, etc. So we are able to draw upon previous expertise to support the current people who work on this issue in Durco. So the idea was then formalized to establish an association of former ambassadors. To do so, but it was also felt that they could continue to be in inverted commas ambassadors for the country, in the sense that they could articulate publicly and assist the department in reaching out to the general populace with regards to understanding our foreign policy, participating in discussions, think tank meetings, etc., to broaden the debate on current issues, as well as to deepen the understanding of our foreign policy itself. So that's the difference between, that's how the two institutions came about. In the case of SACWIRE, it is a body which operates under the umbrella of DERCO,
And in terms of reference, the members are appointed for a 3-year period. We are now entering the second year. Firstly, having been essentially the launch, and two meetings have already been held with the minister. In terms of that, in terms of reference, minister must meet with them at least twice a year in a full plenary session of the membership, where there is an exchange of ideas on what the priority issues are in DIRCO, but also from the broad-based membership that I alluded to earlier, drawing from the various sectors that they represent. In terms of their work experience, of course, they don't formally represent them. They do so in their personal capacities. But given the background, they are able to speak to the various issues and engage the minister much more directly, at least in an organized way, twice a year. So this is a platform, really, for the department and the sectors to also continue to have an ongoing discussion about how our foreign policy is viewed from civil society formations. So they operate under the umbrella of DIRCO, and DIRCO therefore has a responsibility for their functioning, which means that the policy unit de facto becomes their secretariat. So we have to provide technical support to them. We have to provide logistical support in order to have the plan of action, which we have now finalized with them and which will be formalized soon, because we have to obviously attach a budget to it in order to have it formalized now within the DIRCO budget. That process is, as we speak now, being finalized. And then that would end this first year of having control the teething problems of launching it and making it fully operational as a platform for engagement. The association, on the other hand, the Association of Former Ambassadors, on the other hand, is not directly linked to the department in the sense that it is an association of people who are no longer working for the department and is therefore registered as a non-profit organization, an NPO. To that extent, the department does not directly have the same obligations towards it as it does to the council. However, the department does accept and acknowledge the need to provide support, especially in the formative stages of this organization, to give them the support, otherwise they would not be able to come into existence. And we feel this is an important resource for us to draw on. And of course, this is also something that in line with international practice, that in many other countries, these associations are utilized very actively by foreign governments, and so we are doing the same, although perhaps quite late in the game, if I may say so. So we are trying to now work out the modalities of how DIRCO will provide that support to the association, because it is not codified in the same way as it is for the South African Council on International Relations, because that was a body that was established through CANIP. ASABA has about 80 members at the moment, so we do have quite a lot of our from ambassadors to draw from, and obviously it means also, since they are living across the country, some maybe not even in the country, getting them together, we need to work on the modalities but differently and to operationalize them, especially from the interface with DIRCO. We still have to work out those details, and we are in the process of doing so with them. Jefferson, I think just as an introduction to the two bodies, I think I would like to leave it there unless there are particular questions around the two bodies. And as I said, we look forward to bringing them to the committee. This was something that we did indeed plan to do after the new financial year, after 1st of April. So because we need to budget as a unit for allowing to do that. And so the intention was to certainly bring them, even if, as we found out yesterday, a request had been made to them to already come. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Nasruddin, for your short presentation on the two process, the association of former ambassador and high commissioner, as well as the Dutch Council on International Relations. Let's welcome Honorable Ken and Honorable Bumluan. Are there any comments? Are there any questions? Honorable Kalyan, you will be the first one. Kalyan?
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, I think I would have appreciated having a hard copy in front of me in terms of the organogram of who is the chairperson and so on and so forth. Now, the South African Council on International Relations was established or launched in June of last year. What has its program of work been? I hear that you say this is what we plan to do and we want to do, provide a forum, but have you achieved anything since your launch? You talked about the 1st of April and that is when you would look at the budget. Has it been factored into the current budget? And then the members, the membership of the South African Council, do you get paid? Do you get a salary? What is your status and your designation? What is the equivalent in terms of, you know, DCG or what, chief or staff or something like that? Thank you.
Salary for the members of the
SAC, the South African Council on International Relations. My understanding is the South African Association of the Ambassadors, etc., is a separate body. That's a voluntary membership. We don't know too much about what they do and what they have done so far, but you are saying your body is part of the department, it has been set up by the department, or it's been buy-in. I want to know what's the budgetary implications, what your work has been, and what designation has been given to you.
Yeah, that is very, very good. Thank you very much, Honorable Kalyan. Okay, they are still thinking. Any responses from the department? Let me just add one or two things so that there is a comprehensive response. The two bodies, are they, and I'm not sure if the example I want to make is quite appropriate, but let me not make it anyway. Are they a brain trust in the same way that the USA does with its former president? Because you see, that one is formalized. I don't know how many times the president of a sitting president of the USA meets the former president. But he or she, but it's he. He utilizes them according to their strength. For instance, others were good in the Middle East, others were good in Africa, others in Asia. So when the president consults with them, or when the president or the USA appoints them for mediation, or to be part of eminent persons, they look at who knows what and where. So they are, in my view, gainfully utilized by the American foreign relations. Now, I'm just trying to establish whether these South Africans who are in SAQA and also this side, is there an intention to utilize them that way? And if it is so, why are we then limiting them to the minister, or we're saying that they must meet the minister and beyond the minister, the president? Because you see, the face of South Africa's foreign policy is the president, supported by the minister. Now, if the president wants a view, an advice or something, can the president just call a particular person, look, you're an expert on China, can you give me a briefing or say, minister, that's just something like that. Then the other thing is whether it is their work to appraise or evaluate the DERCOS and and by extension South Africa's foreign policy in relation to certain countries or to certain branches. For instance, they could say that our foreign policy regarding the European Union has the following weaknesses, and we need to strengthen in this area that and that and that and that. Or we hear that they are not happy with that, and we need to attend to that. Asia, or other Western powers, or the Africa branch. Of course, taking into account that there are vacillations and changes from time to time. And the other one is whether these two bodies who else they meet? They are there, very elitist. Former ambassador, and then also this one, SAQA. How do they interact with business? The former, in the same way that they do the minister, how do they interact with labor? And all these two is for a good reason, if I may explain. It's because South African business people are doing business all over the world. And it's important that the political environment of that world be clearly understood for them to work there. Using, of course, South African laws sometimes, or the laws of those countries. But also labor. These federations may be interested or are interested in the things that, or in the policies that we pursue in different countries, particularly your AMCU, your COSATU and others. Given that the companies that are working in South Africa are multinational, but the people who are working in certain companies in South Africa may be members of different labor unions, and then they are doing business in Africa and everywhere else. So whether we take people like that into account. And lastly, do they have to make stakeholder involvement like the department should do, like the committee should do, but we haven't done that last year. We want to attend to that with me. But just involving people so that the citizens of the country understand what the president is doing, what the minister is doing, what the committee is doing, what parliament is doing, what are the things that are done in their name, and what do they stand to gain? Are they part of structures that can make an explanation like that? And or if they know something, where do they take this information to? Is it only to the minister? And whether from such person, they can be made to serve or advise in such structures such as BADEC, in the AU, in the UN, and other multilateral structures where South Africa is serving, or observe and then advise. Yeah. For now, I think I want to pause there. But maybe just let me just embrace this. You see, we have 126 missions, no? And we are interacting with many heads of state, many prime ministers, kings and queens, traditional leaders, many other persons of influence. Someone needs to know, not quite know, but needs to analyze, in addition to the officials in the department, and advise the minister and the president, or advise the candidate, because this would be a brain stop for the country, about where matters stand. For instance, whether we could keep certain relationships, or why we must keep certain relationships. What is the strategic importance? Is it your strategic, or is it economic? Because sometimes you have to keep certain relationships for national self-interest and informed by the two. Yeah. For now, I want to plug there. Honorable Khadere, come in.
Thank Certainly, Chairperson. I really appreciate the presentation you have made yesterday, but there's only one question I'm asking, in particular in connection with the former ambassador at association. Is there any way in which this association is going to be used in the future, in particular in the diplomatic, like, in the diplomatic institutions that have been established? I think that this can get an explanation from that side, and that in what way are they going to be used? Are they be visiting experts or professors, or will they be giving certain notes to present as the people working in the field? Yeah. Because even when you do experience stuff like the Masters of Business Administration, you know, they get experts in the field, like we're in the field. I don't know on the side of the diplomatic people, but they're going to around that. Thank you.
Yeah, for now, can we get responses? And maybe that's military responses.
Not yet, Jefferson. Thank you. Indeed, do you want to go first, but maybe on the academy and those issues?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, for those questions. And I'll answer the questions on the academy. The question came up in terms of how are we utilizing the members of SAFA. Suffice to say, even before they came together as an association, they've been consistently being utilized within the institution, specifically within the academy. They come in handy when we do heads of mission training before they depart. Ambassador Nene is a regular in terms of presenting. Ambassador Modise, Ambassador Kwena. So there's a number of the former ambassadors that are being utilized in the training of diplomats and in the training of heads of mission that are about to go. And we intend to continue that. Now, what we need to sort out at this point in time is we are engaged with ASAFA, and by the way, the last meeting with ASAFA was on Monday. Monday we met with them to sort out a number of issues. So the issue will be, as we move forward, how do we utilize them as an association vis-a-vis as individual members? And if it's as individual members, how do they then contribute back to ASAFA with new funds at a voluntary institution? So we're working with them on that, because one of their key issues at this point in time is the need for seed funding. And as an NPO, the department cannot, as a government institution, cannot fund an NPO. However, we are working with ASAFA to assist them to identify sources of funding. And there will be a meeting of the treasurer of ASAFA with our own CFO to work on how to help them. Once it costed them, so this is our annual program for the year at ASAFA, and this is where the funds are required, then our CFO will assist them in terms of identifying source of funding. We were sharing with them on Monday, for instance, when the minister has a function like after the budget speech, we get sponsors. So we'll probably go back to the same sponsors that are interested in the work of ASAFA to keep us. So we will assist them on the budgeting side. However, we cannot put funding in them. The other thing, they've been quite proactive themselves, ASAFA. They've been to business institutions. They've been to other provincial government, because they're supposed to provide international relations advice to provinces. They've been to, I think, in Arsala Nirasinda, which you see Premier Mahashule sometime this week. So they have been really going out to see where they can provide advice. And it's through all sectors, business sector, government, local government, municipalities, provinces, including, of course, being a resource to the department itself. And so that's how we are with our staff at this point in time.
Thank you, Chen. Thank you, Honorable Members. On the first question of hard copies and the organogram, I offer our apologies for that. We were only made aware this morning that the two chairpersons would not be here. So I will undertake that when we do arrange for them to come here,
of the 1st of April so that we would have been budgeted properly for there. But this year, we will make available a package of documents relating to the establishment, etc., as part of the briefing then. Who the chairpersons are? Zach Pryor, the chairperson, is former Deputy Minister Ajit Pahad. He is supported by a steering committee comprising of two deputy chairs and two other members. One of the things that we discussed this weekend was that if they are going to have some working groups that focus on particular areas, such as, for instance, an Africa working group, an economic diplomacy working group, then they should also be permanently part of the steering committee. So the point that I made earlier about this is the first year and so maybe working out optimally some of those things as well. And so when we come back for the next briefing, we will hopefully have a better sense also of an organogram that we can share with the members. But at the moment, it's a chair with two deputy chairs and a steering committee that we interface with as the co to support the broader organization called SACWIRE. On the ASAFRA side, Ambassador George Nene is the chairperson. He is supported by an executive committee. I'm not sure exactly how many members the executive committee has, but I think about seven. I think there's seven members of the executive committee, a treasurer, deputy, ambassador within salaries, the deputy, they have a secretary, treasurer, and so forth. So they have the executive committee, and as I said, they are formally already registered with Treasury as an NPO. With regards to the question of payment, ASAFRA gets no payment and at the moment has no, does not receive funding yet, but as the DDG pointed out, we are in discussions with them on how to do this since they are registered NPO, how do we support them and the function given that they are such a valuable resource to the country and that we want to tap into that. They do, of course, on the individual level, as the DDG pointed out, those who do assist in the training, like all the other trainers that we get from Albury, like the St. Thomas University professors, etc., they do get an honorarium for their time to do the training. So in that sense, they do get it, but not as ASAFRA. Whether ASAFRA is now going to require them to say in that as part of the organizational thing is going to be up to ASAFRA, not to DELCO, but they are in discussion on how to do that as part of ensuring that the organization is able to function and raise funds as well. They of course also, as the CC pointed out, broadening their scope of work. And both organizations, to answer the question that they raised about whether they remain sort of at the elite level of meeting with a minister and maybe with senior CERCO management exclusively. No, indeed, they are reaching out more broadly at the various spheres of government level. Of course, at this formal stage, funding constraints is one of the constraints that also a tap on them in terms of government provinces having to set up meetings with stakeholders outside of the broader housing area. And I say housing area not because they are all in housing, but because we can assist them sometimes at least in terms of convening meetings because we have premises and facilities where we can assist with some of those kind of logistical things that they don't have the capacity to do. On the question of the designation, we're still working on that because they are in the NGO. With that choir, yes, they do get remuneration. This is in accordance with the DBSA schedule that is issued every year for consultancies, for advisors, etc. And we have a particular designation. We maybe in a package should
next time include the schedule from which we draw at, so that we are able to account for how they are remunerated. We don't see this from Delta's point of view as remuneration. These are high-level people who have high-level jobs, and the amount of money that they get really is what we consider to be an honorarium. So that, in other words, they are not put out of pocket to fly in for a meeting that they do not pay for the transport, etc. So we're really covering the costs that we can. For instance, we need to stay over if it's a two-day session, then we cover those costs. But also, in order to cover some of the personal expenses, we give an honorarium for the hours that they spend during that. But we do that in accordance with the prescribed PFMA rules. We have those workings that went through Canada to get approval. So we use an official schedule, which is not determined by HRSA, but by the DPRA and by Treasury. And the designation was determined by Treasury. So we had to describe in terms of reference what the job description would be, and Treasury advised as to what level they are each. And the chairperson, deputy chairperson, and the ordinary members get slightly different in terms of level. But that, again, as I say, is part of the schedule, the official schedule that is issued by DPSA. In terms of the USA and the example that the chair used, in fact, the Council on Foreign Relations was one of those that we looked at when this idea was almost 5 years ago, or so, when we started developing this body that we would like to establish. We looked at the U.S.'s Council on Foreign Relations as one of the examples. Of course, we are not in a position to emulate them for various reasons, if I can just mention two very briefly. The U.S. Council on Foreign Relations tends to be a revolving door. If Republicans are in power, the Democrats or held office, many of them then go into academia basically by working for the council. And then when their party comes in power again, then many of them become senior officials within the administration, and the others become. So that's one of the reasons why we obviously don't emulate their model very closely. But and then the other one is their members, when they are members of the council, also are linked to huge corporations usually, and hold boardroom positions, and are therefore through those corporations able to source very generous funding for the council, which means that the council has a close relationship with business and also with the White House, and therefore is able to have both good, let's say, deep pockets when it comes to financial resources, but also political clout when it comes to the ability to have prominence, and therefore, for instance, when it's not unusual when the General Assembly meets in September every year that many presidents are called to come and address the council, etc. And as members may be aware, the U.S.'s council, actually, the Council on Foreign Relations, was visiting South Africa last week because they have deep interest in what is happening in South Africa. Oh, okay. No, we had nothing to do with it, so I'm mentioning it because it was in the media, and I'm sorry. The U.S. Council on Foreign Relations came to do it in South Africa. It wasn't handled officially with the government because they basically like a think tank, but they spoke to various stakeholders in business, etc., and they were in particular keen to understand what was happening in South Africa in terms of our currency, Goa, these kind of issues. So they were also obviously looking at politically what is happening in South Africa, etc. So they were doing an in-depth study on this, which is something which we need to look at. But officially, as government, they did not really engage with us directly. The main point I wanted to make was that there is a deep interest on their side in what is happening in our country, and of course questions of our BRICS membership and things like that come into question as well. So there were a number of issues that they were interested in. Now, I'm saying all of this in the context of how did we 5 years ago plan then for our own council to operate? And to come back to the question that the chair posed, in a sense, yes, we are then, if I may use your words, chairperson, the brain trust in that sense that they have the experience and they represent the experience of the sectors that they work in. To bring to the table directly face to face with the minister at least twice a year some of these issues. So for instance, when AGOA is a big issue, Labour will speak to their concerns directly to the minister to say, but this is what you're worried about, whereas organized business is also on the table in the council. So in their own community, they would discuss these issues and present to the minister what they feel are recommendations of how the government should approach this issue. Now they don't have time for consensus, by the way. They can speak independently, and we value that, in fact, and we encourage them to try and find consensus because it makes it easy for us to adopt their recommendations. But on the other hand, we do not want to stifle the fact that they enrich our deliberations within their scope by bringing these different viewpoints to the table. So on AGOA, if certain sectors feel, even in business, they were divided. Certain sectors felt that this was going to destroy our poultry industry, as well as, of course, it was extended out to beef and to pork, etc. But the poultry industry especially. But on the other hand, others felt that consumers will benefit and that this would be good for the retail business and so forth. So these are, I think, the debates that the minister is now able to hear directly from practitioners rather than purely from us as a policy unit to do the analysis, but who are part of the government already. So this is, in that sense, I'm saying they do form that brain trust that the chair was referring to for government. But they definitely do have direct links with the organization. So for instance, Mr. Anita Baloyi, one of the members who is with the Black Business Council, for instance. So their affiliation with the broader organizations that they are engaged with means that they are able to also caucus, report back, engage, and bring that vast base of knowledge and information to the council and to the show, to our minister. We are also looking at both within SACAIA as well as ASAPA, the establishment of a database of the who knows what and where, which is the question that the chairperson posed. Now, the DDG mentioned that our unit is also now responsible for the MSU, the Mediation Support Unit. Now, that has not yet officially been launched. It's really still going through the initial stages of concept development becoming operationalized, etc., and hopefully from the 1st of April we will have a proper budget for it. But the reason I mentioned the Mediation Support Unit is because within that, for instance, we will have a roster of former ambassadors who were involved in negotiations. So when we go to Burundi or we go to DRC, they actually know who knows what because they were there. So when Sarasco was involved and how to bring them in to say our new ambassadors are there, or the depth needs deep understanding, who should we talk to? And just by way of example, this expertise is critical. Many of the former, many of the current foreign ministers, for example, Russia's foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, was the permanent representative of Russia, the ambassador of Russia to the United Nations at the time when I served there. Our ambassador was very good friends with him. Now, ambassador is retired now, but they had a very good relationship with him. So if we had difficult negotiations, it's good to have somebody like that as part of our delegation because we already have the ability then to speak as friends. Of course, notwithstanding all the other issues, I'm merely mentioning that this applies to several presidents at the moment and many prominent foreign ministers who were, another example I saw last week, Abdul Haid, who was the permanent representative of Egypt, is now the head of the Arab League. some of the head of the Arab League is good friends with us because of our relationship with the United Foreign Ambassador. So this is the kind of thing of, you know, bringing in that expertise and augmenting the strength of DERCO on this issue through a database of who knows what and where they are. Are they meant to appraise DERCO? I would not say appraise because we do have monitoring and evaluation within government and, of course, through the presidency. But what we do get from them is their perspectives, their perception, and their recommendations. And I think that's important. And to that extent, one could, I suppose, you know, in a manner of speaking, say that they do some evaluation. But it's not that's not their formal function. Their function is really to look at DERCO, both its institutional form, how is DERCO operating, etc., structures and so on, as well as the content of what we do, and to give their perspectives and views and share that with the minister and to try and strengthen what we do and to be a sounding board for the minister on what is the thinking outside of government. We, of course, encourage them to do so independently, so although they have a relationship with us in the sense that they operate under the umbrella, as the term of reference puts it, of DERCO. They remain independent in the sense that the membership speaks independently and addresses the issues and the views that they have on how we conduct our relations on a particular issue in a very independent way. And we encourage them to think independently and to speak with an independent voice because it's important for the minister to hear their frank views and to share and engage with them. So the academy that is covered, I hope I've covered all the questions. Thank you.
Chair, thank you, Chair. The one question that you asked, if they can serve or observe other structures at the multilateral structures. Suffice to say that yes, as far as we haven't been taking advantage of certain positions that are in the multilateral fora, and as a strategy of the department is to identify strategic positions in different bodies and see how we occupy those. So it's for, and there's a process that will be followed when vacancies do come up and we follow those to identify suitable people to build those structures. And it's for the department then to look at and say, who are the capable people, including the brain trust of this mediation or supplier or home ambassador, to say, how do you fill those positions with the vacancies? But there is a process right now to identify different positions in different bodies, but strategic ones, not only just any other position. And indeed, different South African, including these, the brain trust that every referred to, should be available where possible to take up those positions. Yeah. But there's a process that we then follow to fill those positions. Thank you.
I'm looking at you because my mind boggles a bit when you say strategic. You know, an intelligence that someone makes you.
We are all over the world, and therefore we have 126 meetings, and we need to deploy South Africans at different levels. If you talk about the bank, for instance, there is a new development bank that is going to be there. Even if we were to put someone at a DDG level or whatever level there, but there are these different levels. Then you get every country, you get better advice. We'll be relating to the IMF. Who are the people who work for the IMF? What are their nationalities? And therefore, where do their loyalties lie? You see, IMF and the World Bank, the UNGA. All of these structures, all of these structures that we relate to, if the people work there, don't share our culture, don't share our language, don't say, we're just foreigners when we come there, somebody interprets for us, this South African, da 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 da, and you go away. What language, what culture, who do you think we can advise best? Even within the African continent, I would say this thing, because we are hydrophone, we are lusophone, we are francophone. So if we don't have people in certain structures in the AU, different levels, SADC, different levels, etc., etc., which would allow about the vehicle, I want another thing. And I want it to be everywhere, they must even try. And it will ease our unemployment. I'm not sure if I'm not burdening you in the NLC right, but if you feel which is a key question era for NASA, I noted that you wanted to come back and then, or you want to come back before Kade. Kade has actually raised up his hand when he spoke about the prince, when he spoke about the American weapon. No problem. Yeah, make your comment.
Chairperson, I think, as I said initially, that this presentation was good, but what I also interested me more is about the U.S. Council on the Foreign Relations. What is interesting, I saw the agenda, one of their platforms which they had, I saw their agenda. You know, they went to come, Chairperson, in analyzing South Africa, political forces, and all those things, the possibility if this party can be in government, actually, they're thoroughly positioning the U.S. properly. Yeah. So, really, but what interested me is that they find the mistake God. They find the mistake God for us. Yeah. So, not coming from them, but not coming from government. It was a trap. Trust, family trust, because doing that. Yeah. Yeah. It was a family trust which was pushing for us. It shows that this issue of analyzing the world environment is a serious business. So I really, what I want to say, Chairperson, I really, really support what the DDG has said, in particular, in going to help the association of former ambassadors and high commissioners. It's going to be very crucial. Because when you look at the saga of AGOA, really, there are a lot of things which are discriminated, which came out of that. I think that if we, or our own think tanks, were there in America on the ground, interacting with other stakeholders, they could have counteracted some of the demands that were coming from the congressmen with money looking. So I think that we have to up our ante, because we have up it. We have up our ante. I think this is the beginning. This is one of the fragiles which we are opening up. That's why I see that. From the chair, as of yesterday, we must really support that. It must not only be the issue of the CFO, also ourselves, wherever we go. The business associations we have, we must lead them towards those issues, so that, because we'll be doing it daily. Because there's nothing as dangerous here as we find the situation whereby people come from the same country, but when they are in an international platform, they speak four times. Seems different, as if they're not coming from the same country. I think that this association and BACWA can be a big stabilizing center. On particular, when coming to the issue of foreign policy issues, we want to see so that even if someone, let's say, even someone is coming from a very right-wing organization, and someone from South Africa, someone comes from a very left-wing organization within South Africa, but we must be able to elevate that with all the tendencies, people have got a right to maintain. Yeah. Of course, it's all right for that right to maintain that tendency. But at the end of the day, we put South Africa first at the center. I think that this is one avenue which we can use, so that it's not only, as I said, that what I also like is that there's independence from the department, so that it cannot be seen as a party political agenda. Instead, it must be seen as an agenda for South Africa, the African continent, because no African continent has to be screwed. I'm sorry, yeah, I know that it has to be hidden, left, right, and center. It ends up being confused. Né? So I think that is a good starting base to go for, but it must be supported, Jefferson.
any particle of South Africa must support this. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. And the chairperson and I, we did attend when they launched. But I said that we didn't go to the association, we went to the company. However, I'm just asking myself, you know, I'm thinking loud, not the song. Thinking loud. with the association, there is more, they are old, those people. And I'm just saying that with the knowledge, maturity that girls, can they have mentorship in order to instill these values of patriotism, especially with the students who are doing international relations? You know, I'm just saying that, you know, you can see that there is a lot of confusion that is really rampaging in South Africa. But to instill those values, especially where we come from, because you can see that, you know, some of these model things, they're taking this other direction that we don't really understand. So if we can speak to them, that they must really mentor our young people. I thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, the point that you said, Honourable Chair, about the strategic position thing at all levels is indeed very, very valid, including PAs and officers of the UN. So yes, we indeed consider it in exactly that manner as you have put it. But it's interesting, I think drivers and key, we need to look at that as well. On the issues that I wanted to come back to, because we have asked the extent of consultation with labor in particular, to say, in fact, on SACOIA itself, there are members that represent labor, and there are members from the civil society in SACOIA, and they have an obligation to go back. And in fact, as SACOIA, as a totality, in their interactions, they have identified round tables that they will be having throughout the country. And those round tables will include a round table with labor, a round table with business, and so forth. So yes, labor has been quite strongly represented within SACOIA, but including the round tables that will be taking place in the coming year. The issue that Honourable Member Rapid has mentioned is very interesting, because Ambassador Nene, in fact, shared with us this will have been last month about his involvement at the University of Pretoria to try and mediate between what was happening there and trying to build. So indeed, they have already leveraged or brought him in to assist as a former ambassador. And he gave this to us as an example. They would be available too. But I think it would be a matter where Honorable Khade was saying, talking about this association and really making South Africa aware of the resources and the experience that they have, because as far as mediation goes, they are also, I mean, they've mediated all over the world and they're available to us. So indeed, but we will raise it with, we'll put forward, but as I said, they will have a chance to come. And in fact, SACOIA has requested the department to schedule a session with the portfolio committee, and one of those things that we've put in the agenda for this year. I mean, in the budget for this year. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. You want to come back? It does seem that if everything else is in exhaustion, we'll have almost an hour human rights day to come back.
Thank you. Thanks. You need the human rights day.
Something like that. Investigating and of course if that happens, the table will not be reorganized.
I'm not going to
do comments.
Thank you, Chair. It's some of the issues that were raised. On the question of can we deploy, absolutely. In fact, part of the idea of having the roster is that the member and the president will now be able to play through Jericho. We need to have some experts or people who have experience on a particular issue and to be able to gather them very quickly. So the roster would allow us to do that. But there are also requests that we receive regularly as that go, for instance, through the UN, to say we are sending in a delegation to Burundi or sending in a delegation to Syria. Do you have people that you wish to contribute to that? So that is often asked to do that. By having this roster, we are able to say our former ambassador in Syria is from Arabic and knows the key players there, et cetera. Yes, we will support somebody going to it. And that is done by appointment to the minister or the president in the form of a special envoy or a comment to UN delegation or UN team. So definitely that can happen. We are now getting to the stages of organizing who does what, as you put it earlier, so that we are able to utilize that resource better, or that pool of resource of people as resource. And as the same applies into the IMF, the BRIC Bank, and so forth, is more permanent departments where we are able to look at people who are able to especially, and I think that's a very important point you make, Chairperson, that we deploy people who are able to articulate South Africa's position, articulate Africa's position in a strong and assertive way that we understand it to be, and not people who may have been living there for long and may have not got the same association with the issues I spoke about yesterday with regard to the white paper, which is the roots and the normative aspects of what informs our foreign policy, because that is so critical. I think the point about analyzing the world situation, this is very critical. Yesterday I spoke of the realignment that is happening globally, and analysis is very important. And the ability to draw from the SACWI membership, which brings that civil society component to our foreign policy, as well as the expertise of our former ambassadors who were spread out across the world, I think complements the work perfectly for Jericho. In order to get a sense of what is happening right now, where is all of this going, and how do we as well have a position ourselves to ensure that we protect and promote our interests. And then finally, on the membership in terms of the instilling of values, I think it's important that our youth, we do have an internship program and a cadet program, and I think it's important that we must ensure that the youth that we now bring into Jericho also understand the basis of the values that inform our foreign policy, that they also understand that this is not purely a political science or another job in the civil service, but that they are mentored by the council members, many of whom are now at an advanced age, but who can hopefully impart the essence of our foreign policy and the true history and what informs our foreign policy. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nasiruddin, for a very good presentation, and DDG Shoyemi. Mr. Zahir didn't want to say anything today. Can I hear you about the suggestion I was earlier on making?
I
second it.
I'd
love
to
hear it. Second it and third it.
No, he's coming.
And then can you please